it was exciting. You know, being a father is very, very important to me. And when I knew I had my daughter, I think it humbled me a little bit because it made me identify a lot of things that was important in your life because it wasn't about you anymore.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's The Art of Fatherhood podcast is being sponsored by BetterHelp. Today, we are dealing with all kinds of stress out there, and we're dealing with it in so many different ways. People don't realize that physical symptoms like headaches and digestive issues can be real indicators of stress. And let's not forget about all that doom scrolling on social media. People are sleeping too little or too much, undereating, overeating. A lot of different factors weigh in when you're dealing with stress. I worry about things like if I'm doing enough for my family and friends. Plus, I deal with a lot of stress with running my own business. It's a constant struggle of managing my stress levels each week. There are nights where I can't sleep right away because I have so many things going on in my head, thinking about the day and what I have to do and when will I get it all done. I have found that talking with someone about my fears, anxiety, and concerns helps me get through it. Plus, getting in some exercise and hanging out with my family definitely recharges my batteries and lowers my stress levels. Yet there are times where I even need more help. That is where BetterHelp can come into play. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. And you don't even have to be on camera if you don't want to. It's way more affordable than in-person therapy, so why not give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress levels? You owe it to yourself. Art of Fatherhood listeners can get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/artoffatherhood. That's BETTERHELP.com/artoffatherhood. What's going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for another edition of The Art of Fatherhood. I'm very excited to have this gentleman on. He's got daughters. He's like me. I've got daughters as well, but I enjoyed watching him just take it to the guys on the court in the NBA, the one and only Mr. D. Brown. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Art. Hi, great having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, man, looking forward to chatting with you about basketball, sneakers, all that good stuff. But let's first talk about the reason why I came on here, sir, about fatherhood. When you found out you were going to be a dad, what was going through?
Man, it was the middle of my rookie. Was it my rookie year? No, it was, I think, my second or third year. And my first daughter was born in Boston. So she's a Celtics fan, Patriots fan, Red Sox fan. She's diehard New Englander. And she's my oldest. And, you know, it was exciting. You know, being a father is very, very important to me. And when I knew I had my daughter, I think it humbled me a little bit because it made me identify a lot of things that was important in your life because it wasn't about you anymore. And, you know, my wife, Tammy, who we've been married for 29 years, it just opened your eyes. Number one, being a man, because now you have a grown person, whole new person that you got to take care of other than yourself and your wife. And I just want her to be the best she could be. It didn't matter if it was sports, or, you know, she didn't have to be a basketball player. She could be anything she wanted to. So I made a effort to make sure that she understood that she grew up, and obviously she's done well for herself in the WNBA, you know, great basketball player in college. She won a championship. So, but that first moment when, you know, you hold your child, you know, that this is your responsibility and you do everything in your power to make sure every resource, every opportunity that you can provide for that little kid, you provided for her.
No doubt, sir. And I think, you know, of course people see your time in the NBA, but then also after that, they know probably hard work is something that, right, you and your wife are looking to instill into your daughters, right? But what are some of the other core values you were looking to instill into them?
Well, I always tell my kids, and you know, there's two things in your life. You have your negotiables, your non-negotiables in your life. And your non-negotiables are your family, your faith, and unconditional love. Those cannot be negotiated for anything. And those things stay constant in your life and the forefront of your life. Your negotiables are fame, money, success. Those things come and go, and they can go away quickly. I've seen famous people be unfamous, or what they call canceled. I've seen people lose all their money, be bankrupt. You know, we've seen that on the professional level, any other level. So the things that you can control, that your non-negotiables, those are your DNA. Those are your core values in your family, And hopefully I'll steal those into my kids, because I have three daughters and a son. My son's the youngest, he's 16 years old. And they can take that with them as they build relationships with people. They want to have a family, they get married, have kids, work environment. You know, if you keep those non-negotiables always in the forefront of your mind, in your heart, I think those are important things that you can build a foundation of just growing in healthy relationships, not just relationship, healthy relationships, effective communication with those things in mind.
I interviewed a lot of dads, D, and I love, this is the first time I heard negotiables, non-negotiables. Right. I know people might say it in a different way, but I love when, you know, especially as a dad, you want to communicate well with your kids, right? Mm-hmm. And I think having negotiables and non-negotiables and just putting it flat out there about what is, you know, and obviously you determine it, right. You know, you explain it, but I think that's fantastic what you're doing right there. So I love that. And I hope other dads listen to this will incorporate that into their, you know, parenting Rolodex, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, once you became a dad, you're like, all right, we got to take care of this other living thing, right?
Right.
What is something that your kids, you know, your daughters and your son have taught you about life or about yourself that you didn't really realize was there until you became a dad?
No manual. There's not a manual. It's all on the fly half the time. You know, things that you thought you knew because you're a grown up doesn't happen. It doesn't happen the way you want to. And you have to take a stride and you have to, you know, make some hard decisions for your kids because you do know better because you've been there, done that. But you also got to let them make decisions and mistakes and let them grow a little bit. And as long as the mistakes are not, you know, hurting themselves or hurting somebody else, you want them to make decisions and go, okay, you know, you have a choice in your life to do anything you want to, but you cannot determine the consequence. So make sure you understand that. So I've learned that I probably gave my kids sometimes too much rope. Sometimes I've been like really, really like, hey, you cannot do that. And you're going to be mad at me about that, but it's okay. You'll understand why down the road. And I think I've tried to do a pretty good job at that. And my wife has done a pretty good job of that as well, because she's probably a tougher one. I'm the soft one, you know, like I let them get away with anything. My wife's like, no, that's not how it works around here. We've got curfews. Like my kids, like little things, like my kids don't drive until they're in college. Like they don't drive a car until they're either a senior leaving to go to college or in college. That's just one of our family rules we've had since we've had my oldest daughter, Alexis, and it hasn't changed. No matter what's going on, my friends got cars. Okay, good. Ride with them, you know, like, or we're going to take you. We have time. That's the decision we make. So the sacrifice we made as parents of saying you can't drive is a sacrifice that we've got to take them places. And is it inconvenient sometimes? I got to drive you across town to pick you up. Yes, but that's the rule we made. They understand that and they don't question it. So again, if you stay firm with your beliefs of you know, the family dynamic, it works out well. But I've learned so much of not try to be the cool dad. Like, don't be the cool dad, just be dad. Like, you know, and they get really embarrassed. So I don't like to embarrass my kids same way I didn't like my parents embarrassing me. So those things you learn as you get older and you're in their environments, and you know, it's the age of social media now. So I don't do TikTok. I don't do that stuff. And every once in a while they try to get me to do it. And you know, it's fun. I'm gonna do anything for my kids, but yeah. I do have a limit of the things that I'll do with my kids.
Just two quick things to piggyback on. I love the way that you and your wife are committed to making that commitment, being like, you're not getting a car. And that's something that you guys have, you know, put out there for your family, and they know that. And then two, I love the fact that, like, you won't realize what I'm doing until you get a little bit older. We were just having that conversation over Easter dinner with my wife's aunt and uncle with my two daughters. We're just saying, like, you know, rebellious teens, but like my uncle said, like, but when you get older, you're going to realize, your mom and dad had a reason why they did that.
Exactly. And it always comes back like, oh yeah, I'm sure it did. Like when they get older, like, I'm glad you did that for me. Or I'm glad you told me not to do that. So exactly. You know, and you know, you pat yourself on the back, but you're like, whew, I'm glad that sure worked out.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Thanks for sharing that. One more question before we talk about your time in the NBA and other things you're doing, of course, over at Jacksonville University. Talk about a dad hack or a piece of advice you'd offer to new dads.
Ooh, man, a dad hack. I think the best one, I think it's a dad/marriage hack. Okay. Like, sometimes you got to lose the battle to win the war. You know, like, you do. Like, sometimes that, you know, your kids do this. Everybody kids does this. They ask you second when they were to ask the mom, first, and she said no, and asked you afterwards. You go, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. Then they go ahead, and you're like, wait a minute, I just got. Wait a minute, this is now I'm in trouble because you played the game. So the dad hack is ask questions first. Like, did you ask your mom first? Like, that's a dad. Always get permission first from the mother. At the end of the day, yes, be the head of the household, but at the end of the day, you better make sure mom is okay with it. You know, happy wife, happy life. You've heard the sayings and things like that. Yeah. So that hack is sometimes you got to lose the battle to win the war. And
well done.
If the mama's not is going along with this things that's going to kid, hey, I want to stay past my curfew. No. Okay. Mom said no. Like, don't put me in it. Don't get me in trouble. So those type of little things like that, to understand that, you know, it's very, very, kids are blessed to have two parent homes. And some parents don't have two parents home. So I take that very seriously. And even the kids who don't have two parents home, the mothers or the father, they do everything. And that's a blessing too, just have parents in your life that will sacrifice whatever they need to do to make sure you're successful. So when you have two parents in a home, it's got to be a joint decision. It can't be my way or the highway. So I think that's the hack of knowing the line between fighting over something that can be resolved by just open communication and letting your kids know, like, this is a decision that we made, not one against the other.
No doubt, man. such a good piece of advice. And you're right. Like, what you said over there is about, like, you know, kids, it's a blessing to have two parents in the home, or, you know, two committed parents, or just even if you just have one parent that's committed. I totally agree, man. Mm-hmm. Totally agree. Again, growing up in the 80s and 90s, loved watching the NBA, and I still do, but like, that was just, I felt like that was my heyday, just watching it. And of course, loved watching you play as well. What was like the biggest transition for you from the college to the NBA for you?
I think the biggest transition was the speed of the game and the size and strength of the players. You know, I never realized how big Larry Bird was till I got on the court with him in practice, or how strong, you know, Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish was, or how fast Reggie Lewis was. Like, I never knew that. I thought I was the fastest, jumped the highest. And, you know, I was obviously top tier in those different categories, but the speed, the intelligence of these players and the work ethic, like, you think you're working hard until Larry Bird's there 3 hours before practice and they're 2 hours after practice. And you're like, oh, I thought I was working hard, but this guy is still one of the best players in the world, one of the greatest of all time. And he's still beating everybody to practice. And that was the biggest transition, to understand that, you know, I had to be a sponge. I was around Hall of Famers every day, from Red Auerbach to, you know, John Havlicek, to Cousy, and then playing with, you know, potentially that play with four Hall of Famers and being around Bird and Kellen Parrish and Dennis Johnson and Cedric Maxwell. Like, you know, it was just being a sponge and understanding that the things they did before you got there was history. And it was the foundational principle of the Boston Celtics. And you had to be a part of that, all in, 2 feet in, like, nothing. There's no, well, I don't like being here, or I think this is too hard, or there's too many expectations. That's what you want as a pro. Yeah. And coming from Jacksonville, you know, a small school where a lot of people around the country didn't know who I was when the Celtics drafted me. I want to prove myself to those guys first that I belong there. And that was the biggest thing, just being a sponge and understanding that, you know, every day was a learning process, because I had so many great basketball minds in the gym with me every day that I can speak to about their experience and knowledge of the NBA game.
Love it. Taking it as a sponge and feeling that Celtic pride, sir. I love that. For you, you know, you talk about history. Of course, Celtics are laced with history, but you have your own history, man, with the slam dunk contest. Right. A lot of people talk smack nowadays about the slam dunk contest, but you have an iconic dunk. Talk a little bit of a backstory with the no-look dunk that, you know, made you become the champ.
Well, it's funny because I was a late entry into the dunk contest. Somebody dropped out, and I was I had a ton of dunks during the first half of the season. So that's kind of, a lot of people knew about me already. But number one is, it was a never heard of a Celtic being in a dunk contest. First of all, like that was like nothing. That you might as well go find cottage cheese on the moon if you're going to find a Celtic in a dunk contest. And that was, first of all, people were like, what is going on? And then the second thing was, nobody gave me a chance because I was the shortest. I was a rookie. They had big names in there like Kenny Smith and Sean Kemp and Kendall Gill, Rex Chapman. So I was kind of the lesser big name even though our team at that time was the best team in Eastern Conference. Our coach was the head coach for the All-Star team, Chris Ford. We had three All-Stars in the All-Star game. So I was kind of like a backstory in that whole situation. And then, you know, the no-look dunk, it was, you know, something that I never did before. I made it up right on the spot. Back then, you couldn't have props. So you couldn't have chairs or people or hats or anything. So
or cars,
you know, cars, anything, you know, they're like, we didn't have that type of insurance back then in the '90s. So they're like, no, you keep it real simple. Cause we could do those dunks. Yeah. But we couldn't do them in the NBA dunk contest. So basically, you know, I was in the finals with Sean Kemp and I wanted basically to do a signature dunk. And my initial thing was to do something with a hat. And they said, you can't use a prop. I'm like, it's a hat. What am I going to do? Hurt my head with the hat? Doing a dunk. So like, nope, you got to do something different. I was like, okay. And I had a few other dunks I thought were really good that I could have did, but it just kind of organically came of me just basically running to do the dunk, closing my eyes, thinking like, well, nobody really, they go, no, my eyes are closed unless I put my hand, and then kind of organically just kind of eyes closed, hand to the arm, all one to double make sure people knew that my eyes were closed. I couldn't see the basket. So that's how the duck evolved. Like I made it up on the spot. So I'm glad I made it because we'll be talking about the kid that ran to the side of the backboard doing a dunk contest. But it was good. You know, we still talk about it, the Reebok pumps and things like that. So it's been very, you know, like I say, iconic where people, if I don't get somebody either bending down, pumping their sneakers up or their loafers up, they'll do this and go, that was you at least once a day, at least once a day.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to continue that trend because I'm a sneakerhead, man. I don't have your colorway, but I got these. And I think Reebok just came out with like the Celtic.
They came out with the Celtic color one. Yeah, those are nice. Everybody's, yeah. I get very popular when those shoes come out real quick. Like, hey, D, remember me? I go, no, I don't. Can I get some of these? I go, yeah, they're at Reebok.com. Go ahead. Get as many as you want.
But what did that, again, being a sneakerhead, like I said, growing up 80s and 90s and, you know, Jordans and just air flights, all that stuff. Yeah. And like kamikazes for Kemp and all that. And of course you guys with the pumps, Dominique and all that.
Yeah.
So, like what did wearing that, like those Reebok pumps mean to you? I mean, I know you're focused on the game, but like outside the game, what did it mean to you for the kind of the sneakerhead culture?
Well, the funny part about that is, you know, I had a Reebok contract for the dunk contest. And they didn't know what I was going to do. They didn't know I was going to pump my shoes up. So they had no clue what was going to go on. But if you say Reebok pump, the first thing comes up is my name. And that's very, very special to be able to be. Think about all the shoes that ever came out and the people who wear them. And you can say Reebok pump. And they go, that's a D Brown shoe. And I did have a signature after that. And the funny part about that is that after I won the contest, Reebok came out with a signature shoe called D Times. They were pumps. And at that time, there's only three people in the NBA had their own signature shoe. It was Jordan, Barkley, and D Brown. And I was like, well, somebody don't fit in this kind of equation. Like there's a name in this equation that really shouldn't be there. And we're not dumb. It's D Brown. But I sold shoes, you know, and people said I started the shoe wars. Like when I did that, all of a sudden Nike got on point. Reebok came big. So, you know, I think as many shoes that 1 year pumps and Jordans, like, you know, everybody else. So, our team bought those pumps. So to be associated with a shoe company is great. To be associated with a shoe that people still to this day, like you say, different colorways come out and different things come out. Exactly. That's a D Brown shoe. And it makes you feel good that you really did something that really changed a culture. Like, you know, like that was, you know, people start really looking into shoes and making a thing. And, you know, obviously, you know, Jordan's Jordan and his shoes are, you know, the most popular probably shoes in history, casual or basketball. But to be put in a conversation where people know your name with a shoe, not a lot of people can say that.
No doubt, man. When I wear them and all that, like I definitely think of you, man. Two more questions before we finish off the Fatherhood Quick Five. You are the executive director of the University of Athletics Relations at Jacksonville University for the athletic department. Talk a little bit about what you're doing over there.
Yeah, you know, this is my alma mater, so a good chance to come back home, Jacksonville University. After I retired, past 18, 20 years, I worked in professional sports. I worked in NBA either as a senior level executive or a director of player development. So the things I've done over the last 20 years has been basically putting together programming for our young athletes as far as rookies, first, second year players on life after basketball, you know, financial growth, you know, education, making sure they're prepared for when they're done playing basketball, you know, they can have a nice, fulfilling life that doesn't require you just being a basketball player. But I had an opportunity to come back home, you know, the pandemic and, you know, kind of, you know, start beginning you thinking like, man, I need to really, you know, get closer to home. My mom and dad still in Jacksonville. So I had an opportunity to come back and oversee our programming here at our university for our student athletes, our coaches, our sports administrators, devise the culture for athletics department, you know, oversee that and making sure that our student athletes understand that the physical part of playing sports is going to come to an end at some point. You know, father time's undefeated. You're going to stop playing sports, but the mental, the emotional, the relational, the professional, the spiritual, and the financial part is always going to be a part of your life. And you got to grow and deal with that, know how to deal with triggers, how to, you know, understand what FICA is, you know, understand how to talk to people the right way. And those little things that we kind of like at a young age, really don't think that's important until you get into a situation where like, I wish I had some education on that in college. And my job is to find program and resources, put those things together for all our student athletes. We have 500 student athletes here, 35 coaches, 19 D1 sports. So I get a chance to oversee all those things and make sure that our student athletes here at Jackson University have a great student athletic experience. So when they leave here, they feel like they're better human beings, not because they can play a sport.
Hands down, I think one of the best impacts you've had in this world, man. Yes. I love hearing that. And last question before the Fatherhood Quick Five, man. I love bringing guys on whose kids has succeeded in a similar sport. Obviously, mm-hmm. for you mm-hmm. with your daughter, yep. Lexi, for the WNBA, you know, she won the championship. And there must be a lot of pride, but also too, you know how special it is to get to the top of the sport mountain, wherever, you know, whatever mountain you're climbing, whatever right. sport it is. And so, you know, you got the Mannings and you got the, you know, Ken Griffey yeah. Sr. and Ken Griffey mm-hmm. Jr. For you and your daughter, mm-hmm. when you were like celebrating with her,
right.
I know she was elated winning the championship, but you right. must have felt so much fatherhood pride just being in that same realm of sports and obviously basketball, but just yeah. seeing her, like, what does that mean to you, seeing her succeed in the game that you love?
Well, you always want to see your kids do better than you. I mean, that's why you're a father. Like, you want your kids to do better than you, not the same, or so I want to be like, you know, be better than me. So she had a better high school career than me, a better college career than me. And so far, she's probably had a better pro career with her winning a championship already and being a contributor there. And I go back a little bit, and this term kind of got, you know, big after Kobe and his daughter Gia died, passed away, girl dad. And I've been a girl dad since 1993 and 94 when my daughter was born. I went through that whole process that Kobe was starting out with his daughter, coaching AAU, being in the gym with her, you know, taking her to WNBA games, taking her to NBA games. You know, she was a byproduct of watching me play and coach for so many years. So to see her identify as her own superstar, and her own, get her own value was great, because I know how it feels to just see your kids succeed, especially at something that you did and had a part of. You know, it got to a point where, you know, when my daughter, when Lexi first started, you know, everybody said, Lexi, hey, D Brown's your dad. Now it's flipped to say, hey, is Lexi Brown your daughter? Like, she has her own name. Like, see, they don't say me anymore. And that makes you feel good that her star is as bright or bigger than your star. And that's what you want for your kids. So just to be part of that, seeing her win a championship, you know, all the work she put into it, just to hold that trophy. I never got to that level on the team sport, you know, got close with the Celtics, but to see, you know, the accumulation of just all the work to do it, and just to see it, you know, the people cheering and holding the trophy and the champagne and all that stuff and the goggles and locker room, you just feel that, you know, you did a decent job preparing them for those successes and then keep building on them.
Love that. Thanks for sharing that. And again, signs of an awesome dad, where an unconditional love from a dad, where you want your kids to excel in life more than you do. 100% spot on. I appreciate that. I know you're a busy guy. We're going to finish off with the Fatherhood Quick Five. Favorite family movie in the Brown household? What is it?
Ooh, family favorite movie. Wow. Oh, gosh, that's a good one. I'm going to be selfish. I'm going to say Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars fan. Maybe it's not a family movie, but it is a movie. My son's name is Anakin. That's my son's name. All right. So, and his middle name's Walker, and I wanted to name him Skywalker, but my wife put a kaputz on that and just cut the sky off. So his name's Anakin Walker Brown. So I'm saying the family movie Star Wars.
Oh, you are, as you can tell, sir, you're my wheelhouse.
All nine of them. Oh, trust me. It goes deep. Trust me.
Favorite family song, or is there a band or an artist you couldn't wait to introduce your kids to?
Oh, man. My kids love, I mean, again, it's very generational.
Yeah.
For them, they're like, you know, the Jonas Brothers or Justin Bieber or stuff like that. And me personally, I always wanted them to hear like old school, like authentic rap, you know, like, you know, where people told stories, you know, you know, like the Sugar Hill Gang, you know, everybody.
Slick knows. Rick, all those Slick guys, Rick, right?
All the old 90s guys that just told like stories of their life. And it wasn't as vulgar as it is now, but the storytelling in the rap industry back then was great. You know, guys, you know, people like Queen Latifah, things like that, that, you know, I'm very, very 90s rap, and they listen to it in the car and they, oh, this is nice. Yeah, I've heard this beat before. Yeah. Because they're using the same beats that they use in the 90s. So any 90s rap I try to put on when I can, I make them listen to.
Nice, man. Love it. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Oh, my goodness. We're a beach family, you know. Love going to the beach. Anywhere where there's warm water, white sand, cold drinks, we love it. And we love being out there with each other and you know, playing, you know, games on the beach. It doesn't matter which beach it is. It could be Florida beach. It could be a Caribbean beach. You know, we enjoy being at the beach. We did go skiing one time in Breckenridge, enjoyed it, won't go again. It's too cold. I don't, if I got to put that many clothes on and enjoy myself, I don't want to be there. So, but we like the beach, but the beach is better.
I lived in New Hampshire for a bit and everyone's like, oh, you like to ski? I'm like, nope, no.
I won't fall down and hurt myself. That's not fun.
I saw kids like racing down the hill faster than me. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm just going to have some hot chocolate and I'm good.
Yeah, there's a fireplace. I'm good.
Also too, I, you know, people follow you on Instagram at @dbrown_OG. I knew you were kind of a Star Wars fan. I love the fact that you named your son Anakin. Who's your favorite? Is Anakin Skywalker your favorite Star Wars? Who is your favorite Star Wars character?
Of course. There's got to be Anakin. I love Darth Vader. I like the switch over between that. Now, you know, I'm watching The Mandalorian now and can't wait till Obi-Wan Kenobi comes out. And, you know, I watched Boba Fett. Like, I'm deep in it. But my favorite character is going to be Anakin Skywalker. Like, and then, you know, obviously going to the dark side and coming back and being back on the good side and being a Jedi. So just that whole maturation of when he was little and how he's found on Tatooine. Like, I know, trust me, we can go all day. We can have a whole different podcast about that.
I'm gonna have you back on, man. We're gonna have a Star Wars spectacular.
Exactly.
And lastly, top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad. What would you want them to be?
Oh, man. Loving, truth teller. You want to say funny, but again, the funny is kind of like, well, I don't want to think I'm a funny person because I'm goofy, but I want to think I'm funny when I tell like a dad joke.
Laugh
and go, oh, that was the cornish joke, but that was funny, dad. That was corny, but it was funny. So I want to be that too.
Dad jokes are the best. I love it, man.
The dad jokes are the best. I follow something on Instagram, dad jokes, and I tell them to them. And they look at me like I got six heads. Like, that was the dumbest thing. I go, but it was funny, right? So it's great.
People, make sure you follow D on Instagram at @dbrown_OG. Again, I know you're very busy, but I appreciate you taking the time, and I wish you and your family continued success, sir.
Appreciate it, Art. Thanks for having me, man.
I want to thank this week's sponsor of the Art of Fatherhood podcast, which is BetterHelp. They are doing a lot of great work for people looking to get help and just making sure that they can be the best they can be. Remember to get the 10% off your first month by going to BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/Art of Fatherhood. And also, I want to thank you for checking out the Art of Fatherhood show every week. Please rate, subscribe, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And also check out theartoffatherhood.net. You can have a chance to check out some great articles like the weekly Dad's Doing It Right column, the Collector of the Week, and many more. Plus, you have a chance to win some very cool prizes like video games, collectibles, all that good stuff. Go to artoffatherhood.net. And please make sure you rate, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, because I'll greatly appreciate it to get the word out on the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.